Yeah, flip-flop.
They're just being lazy. That's why it's a pushback.
I think it's pure half-assery on the part of Doug Ford.
I didn't use that term exactly,
yes,
but...
She didn't say half-assery.
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
A lot of noise there. Christy Blatchford is here from the National Post. Trevor Mayo, our political commentator. Chris Chapin, partner at Upstream Strategy. Welcome, Friday group of people.
How's it going?
Welcome, Friday hosts. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be welcome.
Play my cards right, I might even get a Monday gig.
Protesters today crashing the grand opening of Chick-fil-A in Toronto, shaming customers purchasing food from the new store, the American food chain, which opened a new store at Yonge and Bloor a few minutes ahead of its schedule this morning, being slammed by protesters for its ties to anti-LGBTQ groups. Here's some of said shaming.
Shame!
Sounds exactly like you thought it would. This, for us, one of the more amusing arguments that took place.
Not the Canada that I grew up in.
Yeah.
It's not.
No,
it's really
exactly.
Not.
That's why you're standing in line.
No, it's crazy because I'm being cooked.
That's just
first
why you're standing in line.
Because I support
with a company.
It's chicken sandwiches.
Millions
it's
of dollars
chicken
sandwiches.
LGBT.
It's
chicken
sandwiches. Exactly.
It's chicken sandwiches.
You, because it's you're a heterosexual cisgendered male. That's why it's only chicken.
So that is, I guess, part of the question. Is it anti-LGBTQ or is it chicken sandwiches, Christy?
Well, that's a rather heavy way to put it. I think you can be two things. And I think, obviously, given the owner of this chain's ties with very conservative anti-LGBTQ causes, that the company is that way inclined. But it's also just chicken sandwiches. My favorite bit was when they were, I presume, staging a die-in or a sort of whatever. All the protesters were lying down, and the people were stepping around them to get the chicken sandwich.
I would walk over a fake dead body for these chicken sandwiches, I would.
You got it.
It also feels to me, Trevor, like if you drill down on just about any company for anything, you're going to find something that you might deem to be unsavory. But is it all worth protesting?
I mean, yes, like every organization at some point within their leadership or through someone who's connected probably has some problematic ties for someone. Chick-fil-A is a little bit different. So Chick-fil-A itself as an organization gives to quite aggressive anti-LGBT organizations in the States, up to $2 million a year from the organization. That's not only just from the owners who actually derive their income from Chick-fil-A as well. So the chicken sandwich that you buy, obviously a very, very, very small percentage, but that money is actually going through the corporate channels back to an anti-LGBT organization. So I think what the protest today, again, we can challenge the methods or maybe their talking points that actually came through on air, but what they're actually protesting is very real. Like, these are organizations that's not just, they want to promote religious freedoms on Sundays. These are organizations that promote conversion therapy. These are organizations that actually actively go out and work with young people on trying to say that they're not born this way and actually create a tremendous amount of hate and harm. So this organization has to take ownership on that. But the one thing I would say on the flip side of this has never actually hurt their business before. This is protested continuously every single time they open up in a new jurisdiction across the States. It is the most profitable fast food organization per location, and it continues to grow. So this isn't bad for business, but I think it's fair game to raise awareness on it.
So I guess for Chick-fil-A, if protesters want to find an avenue, it certainly has to be a different one if they want to hurt profitability, right?
I think it's just proof we live in a society where people can make up their own minds and make the difference between a chicken sandwich and the political stances of the owners. I think if it was anything else, it wouldn't be the fastest growing fast food chain in the entire, in North America. There's a reason there's lines around the corner. There were more people waiting in line to get a chicken sandwich today than there were protesters by tenfold. Mm-hmm. There's still a line. And I plan on getting in line after this show to have one for dinner tonight. Like, I don't understand why we have to draw these ridiculous comparisons between, the beliefs of the owners.
But what are you okay with your money, even in small percentages, Trevor points out, going to something that could promote hatred, could be, in line with a lot of the things that Trevor just said. When we talk about conversion therapy, we all know that's wackadoo.
I pay taxes every day, and we send weapons to, some unsavory.
But you don't have a choice to pay taxes. You have a choice to buy a chicken sandwich.
I wish I had more of a choice to which taxes
I
pay.
Because the thing is with organizations, there's ones that, there's protests not that long in the States about, with SoulCycle and Equinox, right? About, like, one of the senior leaders there was hosting a fundraiser for Trump, and people lost it and quit and all that, saying, well, does quitting actually change the organization? organization? Was the organization actually supporting all that? No, it was the individual. And so that one, they were sort of trying to connect the dots to cause, this is different. This is actually $1.8 million from Chick-fil-A's actual bank account goes towards these causes. That's different just from an owner who has problematic views and it's different from your own.
You can't separate the fact that the owner, it's the owner's beliefs. If he wants to use his company, like I run a company. If I want to spend our company's money on something I believe in, I can. It's well within my rights
to do so. And it's well within other people to raise awareness about it.
So is the revenue he takes and the salary he takes. So it's either money he's taking from the company that makes him the money or not.
Ontario's.
I would just say that I would, if I were a chicken sandwich eater, which I'm not, I don't like chicken because it tastes like chicken, I would buy it from another place.
That's my favorite line. I don't like chicken because it tastes like chicken. That's good. No, but you're right. I mean, I make the same decision. I buy it from another place. Ontario's top court is set to grapple this month with just how much weight should be given to systemic racism when it comes to sentencing black offenders. Christy, no shortage of opinion on this hour when it comes to the idea of maybe making a different type of sentencing, a more lenient sentencing based on the race experience of the person that has been sentenced.
Yeah, well, I will see what the court does. I mean, there are 14 or so interveners, various agencies and groups intervening in this case. So it'll go on for a while. I think it's an interesting subject for discussion. The Aboriginal offender is entitled to get a Gladhew report, it's called, after a case called Gladhew. And sometimes, very often, it results in a sort of sentencing discount because of, the person was, seized from his family or whatever. I mean, we all know the historical Aboriginal issues. We don't all accept, I think, that there are comparable issues in among many black people, that they've suffered from racism. In the particular case where this guy who was convicted of, I think he had a gun with him, and so it's a very current subject. He also had just a desperately awful upbringing. I mean, he was born in a bad area to a single mom, high levels of violence, felt he, I think, had no choice. So, I mean, these are things worth considering. You should always give as light a sentence as you can to also still send the message.
Yeah, Chris, I understand that part of it. You know, when it comes to circumstances via sentencing, I'm okay with having a look at the file and looking at the person's upbringing, but I just don't attach a color to that type of thing.
Yeah, this really, personally, it troubles me. It was a lesson to me learning about how we deal with it with our Indigenous communities and how that is a different set of rules than we have. Mm-hmm. But I do believe at the end of the day, we should have one set of laws and one set of rules if you break them. I some leniency in the sentencing, absolutely. But at the end of the day, it concerns me deeply what kind of precedent this sets, because if it just becomes a game of, well, listen, depending on how tough your upbringing was, the laws are going to be put on you in a different way. Then at the end of the day, this guy had a loaded firearm on him. You don't carry a loaded gun around, like you would even a pocket knife. It's meant to do one thing, and that's substantial violent harm to somebody. So, the idea that we're going to set up different sets of rules and different laws based off of where you were brought up, I just think it's a disaster.
Yeah, Trevor, it's interesting. Christy points out the comparisons when it comes to our Indigenous community. Does that line up the same experience for our Black community here in Canada? And I would say if you were talking about this in the United States, you'd probably be making a bit of a different argument because there is probably more similarities there to mm-hmm. the Indigenous experience here than there would be in Canada.
Yeah, I've worked with a number of Indigenous communities on tribal courts, specifically on the issues of community violence. And some of the, when they take into these other contributing factors, family, family history, all these other things that actually contribute to the circumstance, yes, it does play out differently depending on the individual, right? Like sometimes if you're violent and your parents were alcoholics and you grew up in a violent home, it does not excuse your behavior, but they take that into account when they're actually sentencing to you, instead of say, do you belong behind bars or do you belong somewhere that you can actually get treatment for some of those issues? And so I think if we start to move down in that way, I think more people will be more comfortable with the system instead of it saying, did you check some sort of box? Does that reduce my sentence? And I think that's where people probably get a little bit more uncomfortable. But we also have to be very real about real systemic racism and how it actually contributes to some of these disparities in terms of different groups. And unless we actually have those conversations instead of getting up on our heels, then I don't know if we can actually move forward in an effective way.
A story we brought you today of a Calgary man who, on a recent tour of the Senate, was told to remove a shirt that displayed his support for the oil and gas industry. This guy is actually the chief financial officer for Steelhead Petroleum. He wore a shirt that said, I heart Maple Leaf Oil and Gas. I love Canadian Oil and Gas. During a tour of the Senate over the long weekend, said that he was swiftly taken aside by security and told to either wear the shirt inside out or to leave. One of our texters today at 71010, Christy, saying, I love Canadian maple syrup. I love Canadian hockey. I love Canadian Nanaimo bars. I love Canadian oil and gas. Are they all the same thing, or is it offensive, or is it political?
Well, I mean, where did the notion come from that you shouldn't wear something political into a chamber of politicians?
Agreed.
That's insane.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think this was political, of course. I mean, if I wore a shirt like that, I'd mean for people to understand that I was probably pro-pipeline, etc. But it's a very mild expression of a political opinion. And I don't get why. I mean, I can see you don't want to wear a shirt into a, you know, a parliament area, a parliamentary area that says, you know, it has a picture of a dead baby on it to make your opinion on abortion clear, because that's graphic and it would upset people. But anything short of that, almost, you know, almost, I think it's clear the security, and I don't blame the security guy because those guys do what they're told.
So. And they're the only ones working in the Senate.
And they're the only ones working, absolutely.
I also think, too, Chris, that this Canadian guy knew expressly what he was doing when he wore this shirt. He wore it on purpose that day because he wanted his views to be seen, but that's his right. No?
Yeah, I think last I checked, we still have freedom of speech in this country.
I haven't checked very recently.
Well, no, but I disagree with Christy on what you just said about somebody wearing a shirt. If they want to wear a shirt of somebody like an unborn, I mean, we allow it on the streets of Toronto. You can sit out there.
You can't do it at Queen's Park either.
At a placard. What, at Queen's Park? Yeah. Listen, I spent a lot of time in the halls and in the chamber at Queen's Park. And there's a reason why they encourage people to not wear partisan garb into the legislature, because the audience, you know, in the galleries are supposed to remain silent. That's the whole idea. You're supposed to let the legislators go back and forth, as pointless as that often is. But it's not supposed to be a partisan chamber. So I understand why they are. But to call, you know, a guy wearing an I Love Oil and Gas shirt as trying to make a partisan statement, I mean, it's no different than me walking into wearing a shirt that said, I love News Talk 1010, and you inferring.
Or iHeartRadio.
Yeah, or iHeartRadio, and inferring that, like, nice. By me wearing that, it's just I like the, you know, the political views of this station versus another station. You know, this happens to be the best station.
Now, Trevor, it was deemed that these guys might have gone a little bit too far. They said they're going to educate them a little bit further, but I guess at what point and where do you set that bar as to what you can wear and not wear? Is it just, you know, plain t-shirts with no graphics?
I think this is lunacy. Like I understand having a general set of decorum that you're looking for. I mean, like, in a lot of places, like, you don't wear flip-flops in and stuff. I get that. I think what this speaks to me a little bit more is not just that this was over the line, is the fact that security felt that was overly politicized, that they need to go in. And I think that, to me, is the deeper thing about, like, that every single thing that we look at is politicized. Oh my gosh, they're wearing a collar or not wearing a collar. That is what's getting people uppity. Like, obviously, I Love Oil and Gas is not a fired up sort of statement by anyone. If you do, I don't know what you're like.
It is out in Western Canada. It is out in Western Canada.
I know, but what a simple life if that's what's getting you so fired up as, like, that, you know, I mean, that's the most political thing.
It's on your Tinder profile. I love oil and gas.
I mean, but all the power. Swipe. But I think the fact that the security guard looked at that and saw that as being like, whoa, that's too like political, says a lot about where we are right now.
Yeah, very good point. Trevor Mayo, Chris Chapin, Christy Blatchford, thank you all.
Thank you.
Cheers. I know you guys will be enjoying the tennis tomorrow. You're very hot on that when you came in. I was told Bianca playing against Serena Williams tomorrow should be a great match. No doubt in my mind. Apropos of nothing, I just bring up tennis because sometimes I feel like it, Jay.
If someone was a wagering person, where might they lean?
Oh, can't do that.